Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon. Welcome to Focus on Albany. I'm Cynthia Pooler, and my guests today are my friends John Sullivan, who was a Democratic state chairperson, and Jason Muffin, who's my friend who ran for president in Albany. And we're here today to discuss about the reunification of the New York State Senate. So, John, when you heard the news yesterday, were you surprised? Were you happy? What was your overall reaction?
Well, I think anytime the Democrats attempt to unify, it's a positive thing. Let me first say, Cynthia, I'm delighted to be on the same program with the presidential candidate. That's elevated me. So, Jason, welcome.
Thank you for the compliment.
Well, you know, anyone who has the wherewithal to step into the fray, particularly in these very perilous times, has to be respected. So, good for you. But my reaction, I think, Cynthia, is the governor. I've read several different accounts of the press conference and the dinner at the steakhouse that preceded it and all of that, and watched the video. Andrew Cuomo is a brilliant tactical politician. He's the ultimate transactionalist. He studied what I call in my book the Kenny Rogers School of Politics. You got to know when to hold them, when to fold them, when to walk away, and when to run. And to a lesser degree, Jeff Klein, by his finally conceding and disbanding the IDC, is following the same playbook. In fact, Jeff said something about, he quoted his grandfather as saying that sometimes you got to take two steps backward to take one step forward, or something like that. Anyway, it's been 7 years. It was the IDC was created when Governor Cuomo took office. There are those who debate whether he could have disbanded it before. The fact that he could now mediate its dissolution is, I think, indicative of the power that he may have had all along, but for whatever reason chose not to use. So he is a tactical politician, and he's very transactional. And it's interesting that the timing of this is after the budget has been passed. So if anything, it's a nominal reunification, but they can't even change the leader, even if Simcha Felder came over, which apparently he's reluctant to do. The Democrats still wouldn't be a real majority, and they wouldn't be able to change leadership without, I understand, 38 votes. So it is what it is. But, you know, there's an old saying, when Democrats are asked to form a firing squad, they form a circle. So in the sense that we are not shooting at each other as much, it's a real step forward.
Jason, how do you feel about this whole situation?
I absolutely agree with the timing of it being very well done, being both post-budget. It also seems to have stolen the headlines for gubernatorial candidate Cynthia Nixon, who was in Hoosick Falls. That's not the front page story today. The IDC being dissolved is. Very, very well played, well-timed announcement. It shows, well, and in the long term, I think Cuomo is playing a long game. He says he doesn't have aspirations to run for president, but a number of decisions I've seen him make throughout the past year or so says he's leaving that door open, and unifying people is definitely playing in the playing to the advantage of saying, look what I did in my past. I brought people together. I got people to compromise. I got people to, not form a firing squad in a circle, but just sit at a table and actually talk to each other. Yeah, very well played on Cuomo's part.
Now, when the IDC was first formed, you know, Jeff Klein has always been the head of the IDC. Do you, what's your opinion, John? Do you think that Klein came to Cuomo with this idea, or Cuomo came to Klein with the idea? What do you think?
I think that there's more here than meets the eye. There is, I think you know, Cynthia, a J. Cope investigation into Jeff Klein's behavior as it relates to a staffer, I think, for the Senate. And there were allegations of sexual misconduct. I don't think those have been resolved as yet. I think that Jeff Klein may have taken a step back because there was no other step to take. You know, he could have had a deal 6 months ago where he would have been co-leader with Andrea Stewart Cousins. Now he's not. In addition, Tom DiNapoli, the comptroller, decertified the Lulu for Diane Savino, who is, I understand, Jeff's very good friend, if not paramour, because there was no real chairmanship of a committee associated with it. So there was another senator who got the stipend taken away, too. I can't remember who. But those two things have happened. So it's sometimes, you know, you got to know when to make a deal, and when you're greatly diminished, it's better to surrender and save what you can save than go down completely in flames. So that would be my interpretation of it.
On Saturday, I had gone to the Ossetti mansion, and I had the opportunity to ask Governor Cuomo a question. And I asked him two questions, and they were both about the IDC. The first question was, did he foresee a reunification this session? And he said he did. He said by the time session ended, he thought that the Democrats would be unified again. And then I asked him about Andrea Stewart. And I said, if the Democrats do the reunification, Will Andrea Stewart Cousins have a place at the table? And he said yes. And at that point, I thought, I'm not going to say another word. And what I wanted to say was, how come she has not been invited to the table before that? John, how do you feel about that?
Well, as I said, the timing is... In politics, sometimes timing is everything. They conclude the budget, shut the door, and all of a sudden change the composition of the Democratic Conference. And Andrea Stewart Cousins is then let in the room. There are some who would say it's a little too late. I was interested in Cynthia Nixon. Jason, you said that she didn't get the headline with her visit to Hoosick Falls, but she was mentioned in the story about the IDC disbanding. She was mentioned as a probable cause for Cuomo's, or at least a motivation for Cuomo. And I thought she had a very interesting thing to say. She said, if you set your own house on fire and watched it burn for 8 years, finally turning a hose on it does not make you a hero. I thought, whoa.
I saw that quote.
Yeah, yeah, that was very, very savvy on her part. So I think she needs to do a lot more homework on upstate issues. I'm encouraged that Hoosick Falls was her first stop, really, and that's a good thing. And I hope she does more of this, because if she's going to be believed, she's going to have to dig into lots of other issues that affect upstate as well as the city. And until now, I had not seen evidence of that. But, you know, kudos to her for going to Hoosick Falls. That's another real sore spot on Governor Cuomo's plate.
Jason?
And to follow up on that, I think we're going to see, I think citizens there'll be a, they'll notice subconsciously a subtle shift in how Cynthia Nixon gets reported. Almost every time I've seen any mention in any article, it always refers to how she's a former actress from Sex and the City. When that diminishes and she starts getting the label gubernatorial challenger or candidate, when the title attached to her is getting reported differently, that's when we're going to know that she just didn't come to Hoosick Falls and it's one and done. If she's actually running a serious campaign and it's not just here's what Cuomo did wrong but what she's going to do right, she's gonna pose a real challenge to him. She's going to be a real thorn in his side.
Why do you think that Cynthia Nixon is portrayed as more of a threat than Zephyr Teachout was?
I think it's probably simply name recognition. And also, she has been active in educational issues. In my reading about her, I find that was, I mean, she's not a newcomer to statewide issues of equality in the educational field. For Zephyr Teachout, other than making some comments occasionally on corruption issues, I don't think really had dug in or gotten in the weeds at all. So, I mean, to her credit, she's done that. But my concern about her candidacy at this point is that it may be a mile wide, but it's an inch thin. And she needs to dig down deeper. She needs to do exactly what Hillary Clinton did when she tried to run for the Senate. She needs to tour the state. She needs to talk to the people. She needs to speak to mayors, speak to county legislators, speak to community activists, speak to the people of New York State and hear their concerns. And she needs to familiarize herself with the geography of the state. This is anyone who's ever traveled all over the state will tell you, Cynthia, this is a big state. It's got mountains, it's got lakes, it's got rivers, it's got slums, it's got the grand
cities,
neighborhoods, cities, suburbs. I used to say when I did a lot of traveling, I was in all 62 counties in my role as co-chair of the state party. And one day I spoke in Buffalo, the town of Bliss, in Wyoming County, the last stop on my long day. I had breakfast with a group of labor leaders in the Bronx, and I went to Buffalo for a noontime speech, and I wound up in the evening in the town of Bliss in Wyoming County, where there are more cows than there are people. So I was just to say I went from the Bronx to Buffalo to Bliss in one day.
And right now they have more windmills too. It's really exciting to see.
Yeah. Well, the windmills were the subject of an article I actually wrote for the Syracuse newspaper on Cynthia Nixon. I said she was jousting at windmills, and she really she's mounted a high horse to do that. What she needs to do is get off the high horse, get on the low horse, and get a goppin' and get upstate. And meet and greet, from a lofty pronouncement, but they're not as credible as it would be when you are actually listening, as she did yesterday, to the people in Hoosick Falls.
Jason, as an observer, an observer of current events and politics, did you think the coverage that was received on this issue was more or less than you expected?
I'm not sure I expected any particular level of coverage other than that it would be covered. I think there is more here, and it's not all being kind of brought out at once. I think we're going to see follow-up articles of implications of this, especially as the upcoming special elections happen. We're going to see more of it. like I said, I didn't have an expectation of how much coverage it would receive right now. But I definitely think we're not done seeing this issue come up.
Now, I think the wild card in this whole issue is Senator Felder from Brooklyn. And Senator Felder is a conservative Democrat. And last time around, he ran on both the Republican and the Democratic line. And, you know, they talk about Jeff Klein being like the mastermind and the head of the IDC. I think Senator Felder, I think he holds the balance of power. And I think it could be very interesting what he does. What do you think, John?
I have a two-word answer for that. Pedro Espada. You remember him?
Oh, yeah.
And he was the key to the Democrats losing their majority when he jumped over on the other side, along with Felder and who the other third senator is. There was a triumvirate. I can't think of his name right now, but he wound up getting arrested for something. Montserrat. Ira Montserrat. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he wound up going to jail, as I recall. He could still be there, for all I know. Felder bothers me because he has run as a Democrat and then he caucused with the Republicans. Well, that is disingenuous, at minimum. He could be conservative or liberal or whatever, but when you run on the Democratic ticket, you get elected, and then you go to Albany, and then all of a sudden you caucus with the Republicans instead of the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody should pull the plug on you. I mean, they should have pulled the plug on him a long time ago. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
I assume somebody's running against him in the primary. I hope they do. He doesn't deserve to be reelected. And he tried to hold up the whole budget this year over some issue of how the yeshivas were going to be dealt with. You know, there's that
right.
great controversy down in was it Orange County, I think. So he's a one-issue guy from my standpoint, and he ought not to be the person who is wielding any kind of power. And his fate, who knows? He'll meet the same fate as Hiram Montserrat and others. But I have no respect for someone who is that disingenuous.
But, you know, Jeff Klein has been getting all of the publicity for being the mastermind of the IDC and the fact that they say he wields power. I think as of right now, I think Felder wields a lot of power. Jason, what do you think?
I think anytime you've got someone who is effectively like a deciding vote, yeah, of course they have power. And certainly as I just blanked on his name. I'm not as up on the names on this side of this issue as you guys are. But you know, that's really all I have to say on that. I'm going to come back around to that one, but I was stuck thinking about what was being said about running on one party and then caucusing with the other.
Mm-hmm.
Because I started thinking about if you're running on party lines and that's how you got to office, I think I 100% agree that if you start caucusing with the other side, that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, I also wonder... Yeah, I also wonder if somebody could run on ideas who happens to also be on a party line and is forthcoming. You know, I'm wondering about IDC candidates. They have their agenda. They're now trying to incorporate back in to unify. How do they, you know, they had their particular agenda and now suddenly they're reconnecting. Would the same lack of respect apply to them? That's where my mind was at when you had asked the other question. I'm sorry about not tracking there.
That's all right.
That's okay.
My understanding is that Felder originally ran as a Democrat, period. But he aligned with the Republicans because he got bigger office space, a better deal. You know, you team up with the majority and you get more pencils, more erasers, more pencil sharpeners, whatever. I can't respect that. I must say, though, that when the IDC was formed, there was a more fractious leadership group running the Senate Democrats at the time. I'm trying to think of his name. It was the senator from, I think, from Brooklyn, who wound up going to jail. He was an attorney. Why can't I think of his name? Do you know who I'm talking about? Andrea Stewart Cousins' immediate predecessor. He was indicted, was tried, and convicted, and went to jail. So at the time when Jeff Klein started the IDC, he was on kind of this anti-corruption campaign, and that was at least understandable, as it was to me, at least from a person from Central New York. Same thing with Senator, gosh, I'm going to forget names now. Who's the senator from Syracuse who joined in the IDC? You know, oh my gosh. Anyway, there was at least a rationale for the formation of a caucus separate from the full Democratic caucus. That rationale went out the window when these other fellows, Espada et al., when they were banished. And Andrea Stewart Cousins is about as honest as the day is long, as bright as can be, tactical, smart, pleasant. She is a leader. She's a very nice person, and I have great respect for her. And she is the leader of the Democrats in the Senate. So I think Jeff Klein was right to step aside and defer to her. The fact that she'd allow him to be her deputy is, I think, very gracious of her. It may well be problematic in the long run.
But in that case, what happens to Mike Gennaris?
Well, I think Mike Gennaris is Mike Gennaris. You know, he's a great fundraiser, and he's the guy who's been running the Senate Democratic campaign fund. I think he continues to do that. And I'm also interested in the role of the Working Families Party. They sound like they're not backing off on any of these challenges. They've got, I think, seven challengers to the seven members of the IDC, and they're not going to pull out. So we'll see what happens.
Okay, you mentioned a good point. You mentioned the Working Family Party.
Yep.
Do you think that the Working Family Party is going to endorse Cuomo again?
I think that there's a division in the Working Families Party. There was division the last time. And what did we see?
Yep.
What happened was Governor Cuomo enlisted Mayor de Blasio to come to the Working Families Party convention and essentially sell them on his nomination. And de Blasio did do that. And then, as his reward, look what happened. You know, that's what I say about Andrew being transactional. I don't know. I don't see anyone coming to Andrew's rescue. I think that the SEIU will probably play a very pivotal role, and I understand they're in Andrew's corner. But I don't know. I'd say the jury's out on that.
They're saying that if the Working Family Party endorses Cynthia Nixon, then Cynthia Nixon will be on the ballot until November. And in that case, it would be Cuomo, Nixon, and whoever the Republican candidate is, plus the Green Party candidate. Right.
Yeah.
So
that would be a tinderbox. That would be difficult to predict the outcome. Probably the governor would win simply because he's got the greatest war chest and the greatest name recognition of all four. But he would win a much more reduced majority. He would not get the majority. He could win, but he's not going to have the kind of win that he needs to propel himself, for example, on the national scene.
That's part of the deal here. They're saying that a win by Cynthia Nixon and with Howie Hawkins in the mix and also Cuomo, those three candidates could win enough votes to ensure, or maybe the possibility is greater for a Republican to win. What do you think, John?
I agree, and I think that I don't know much about Molinaro. He's the county executive of, I don't even know, Dutchess County. I should know this. But he didn't vote for Trump. He started out his announcement for governor by saying he didn't support Trump. He doesn't support Trump. I think he was very young. He was elected to the school board, I think, and then he got elected as a legislator when he was 19. I would not underestimate him. He seems to be credible. He seems to be sharp. He seems to be a go-getter, and I think he's going to get tough on the governor as well. So it's going to be an interesting political season, and Andrew Cuomo has learned through the years how to triangulate, how to survive, how to co-opt, how to position himself. And so the demise of the IDC is maybe one big step on the road to Andrew's recovering the progressive mantle that so many see him as having lost.
Jason, you have a tendency to be on the liberal side of things. How do you see this election shaping up so far?
I think, just as stated, this is going to be a hard one to forecast, especially since Nixon does get working parties. It seems like they want to keep the door open as a party to get as much conversation as possible. And they might end up supporting Cuomo in the long run. More conversation out there for voters to decide.
That's my Audubon clock going off.
So go ahead.
You know, but to see a field of an incumbent Democrat and then a challenger who's vying for Working Families Party and then a Republican who is savvy enough to say, well, I'm not going to just, you know, toe the party line on Trump. That's one doozy of a political season to forecast. I mean, it's going to come down to who's got the best valid poignant statements to make, such as the quote, like, if you've been burning your house down for 8 years, you don't become a hero for turning on the hose. It's those kind of sentences that are going to pivot people one way or another. And it comes down to who's going to say what and is it going to pull the right strings? I don't know as much about the Republican, but the other two, I think, can definitely keep that dialogue all season long.
John?
I would agree. It's shaping up to be a year of great political interest. The governor, to his credit, has achieved much. Same-sex marriage was adopted because he was tactical. He supported a couple of Republican senators who then lost their seats, but he was able to get it through the Senate. And as I said, Andrew Cuomo is very tactical about everything he does. And so he can set aside ideology for the purpose of getting X, Y, and Z done. And I think that to his credit, he has done much. But he's done it in such a way that he leaves, it's like he brushes through a situation with steel brushes. I mean, he irritates everybody in the process. The other thing I think is an interesting asterisk on this whole thing is there was no more a Joe Prococo at his side. Andrew always used Joe Prococo as his consigliere. I don't know if Melissa DeRosa is becoming that, but she's no... I know Joe Prococo. I'll tell you, Melissa DeRosa is no Joe Prococo. Okay? So Andrew sometimes can be his own worst enemy, and he can say things when challenged that come across as flippant, that come across as demeaning, and come across not very well. So I think he has the potential for inflicting a lot of wounds in his own candidacy, and that's what I think you need to pay attention to. So it's a game on. We'll see what happens.
Now, John, you've been in politics a while. Did you ever meet Mario Cuomo?
Absolutely did. I was one of the first county chairs to endorse Mario Cuomo. I tell several stories in my book, which is on the way on sale at the area bookstores and on Amazon.com and on Barnes & Noble. It's called Pee Not Your Pants, Memoirs of a Small Town Mayor with Big Time Ideas. I go back and I tell stories about Mario Cuomo and Hugh Carey and Marianne Krupsack and my interaction with all of them and how Mario got to be the lieutenant governor. I was involved in that. I was a county chairman back in those days. I was only 27 years old at the time. So, yes, I do know or did know Mario Cuomo. I respected him greatly. But Andrew is not his father.
Okay, let me ask you this question. You know, for all of the hype, you know, about the keynote address in 1984 and stuff, In a lot of instances, Mario Cuomo tended to be on the conservative side. Kind of like a centrist,
I would say he was contemplative. Excuse me. I would call him contemplative. I think they referred to him as Hamlet on the Hudson. You know, he was a deep thinking political philosopher. I, for one, must say that Mario Cuomo is still, I think, one of the best political polemicists of our time. You can't help but listen to him and be moved. I remember going to a confab in Syracuse when he was announcing, he had just announced that he was running for a fourth term. And I thought, I just don't think he ought to do this. He's used up a lot of goodwill. I don't think he's going to win. But I went and I had my arms folded in front of me, you know, and he started talking, and then one arm fell down, then the other arm fell down, then the next thing you know, I'm clapping. And I thought, God, the guy's magic. And he is. He was. But he wasn't the world's best administrator, and he left the Democratic Party in an absolute shambles because there was this cult of personality around the governor. And he really allowed the mechanism of the Democratic Party to slip. To the point where when Judith Hope and I took over, we had two broken down computers. We had an office in Albany that the rent hadn't been paid in 3 or 4 months. And we had nothing except $500,000 in debt. That's what happens when the cult of personality controls rather than the party. To some extent, right. The same thing is happening with Andrew. He really has not built the party as he should have. And for example, his getting rid of Stephanie Miner is, I think, you know, exhibit number one in that history. You know, I just don't see the state Democratic Party as being as involved in the grassroots as they should be, and I think that that's going to come back to haunt. If he loses, we're back to
1994.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I was there.
Yeah. And so, final thoughts, Jason?
I think that, what was just said about trying to work on building the actual Democratic Party instead of being a cult of personality, there's a lot of urgency that should be put onto something like that. We saw when the presidential campaign was going on, there was a lot of people who in New York State actually were leaning towards Bernie instead of Hillary. We see now Parkland, those students are pushing to get people, young people involved. I think any campaign that's not actually tapping into that is foolish to leave it out there for their competitors. I think the voting landscape is getting ready to change. And any party that's not ready to change with it is kind of doomed to fail, I think. It might not be this upcoming election, but it's going to be one of the ones soon after, if not this one.
I think you're onto something, Jason. I do think the Democratic Party needs new leadership on the national level. Tom Perez is a great guy, but frankly, I don't think he is the right person for the job. We need to encourage younger people to get involved. We need to groom people like Mayor Buttigieg of where Notre Dame is. That's what happens when you get old. You can't think of the names of things like you used to. South Bend, Indiana. He's the mayor of South Bend, Indiana. He had his hat in the ring for a while to run for national chair, and then he dropped out. The Democratic Party needs to reinvent itself, needs to listen to the people who deserted the Democratic Party for Donald Trump, and I'll stop there.
So,
and I think they could.
Go ahead, Jason.
I think if they also get their act together, they can pick up some of the more moderate Republicans that aren't following Trump's agenda, hook, line, and sinker. I think that there's migration both ways there. There's a lot of voters in the middle who are picking a side because they feel they have to pick a side, but they're not getting what they really want. And that's a huge market to be tapped by anyone running a campaign at this time.
So this is a conversation. This is a conversation that definitely will be continued as the IDC drama unfolds, as the primary challenge against Cuomo unfolds. So I hope you guys will come back and talk again. This has been great. So you've been listening to my friend John Sullivan, who is a former New York State Democratic chairperson, and my friend Jason Mutford, who ran for president as a write-in. So if you like this show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, download on your smartphone, subscribe to iTunes. If you have a comment about this show, hashtag Focus on Albany. Thank you, Jason. Thank you, John. We'll talk again, and thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great day.
Thank you, Cynthia, and thank you, Jason.
Thank you both.